here on the spot. I'm not going to ask her, Cavender whined. Well then, you can't really expect her to do it, can you?
Benedict looked at the girl. She was a fetching thing, with a short bob of light brown curls and eyes that loomed almost too large in her face.
Fine, he said, sparing a brief glance back at Cavender. I'll ask her.
The girl's lips parted slightly, and Benedict had the oddest sensation that they had met before.
But that was impossible, unless she'd worked for some other aristocratic family. And even then, he would have only seen her in passing. His taste in women had never run to housemaids, and in all truth, he tended not to notice them. Miss...
he frowned.
I say, what's your name?
Sophie Beckett,
she gasped, sounding as if there were a very large frog caught in her throat.
Miss Beckett, he continued, would you be so kind as to answer the following question?
No!
She burst out.
You're not going to answer?
He asked, his eyes amused.
No, I do not want to tup with these three men.
The words practically exploded from her mouth.
Well, that seems to settle that, Benedict said.
He glanced up at the man still holding her.
I suggest you release her so that Cavender here may relieve her of employment. And where will she go?
Cavender sneered.
I can assure you she won't work in this district again.
Sophie turned to Benedict, wondering much the same thing. Benedict gave a careless shrug.
I'll find her a position in my mother's household.
He looked over at her and raised a brow.
I assume that's acceptable.
Sophie's mouth dropped open in horrified surprise. He wanted to take her to his home.
That's not quite the reaction I expected, Benedict said dryly. It will certainly be more pleasant than your employment here. At the very least, I can assure you you won't be raped. What do you say?
Sophie glanced frantically at the three men who had intended to rape her. She really didn't have a choice. Benedict Bridgerton was her only means off the Cavender property. She knew she couldn't possibly work for his mother. To be in such close proximity to Benedict and still have to be a servant would be more than she could bear. But she could find a way to avoid that later. For now, she just needed to get away from Philip. She turned to Benedict and nodded, still afraid to use her voice. She felt as if she were choking inside, although she wasn't certain whether that was from fear or relief.
Good, he said. Shall we be off?
She gave a rather pointed look at the arm that was still holding her hostage.
Oh, for the love of God, Benedict snarled. Will you let go of her, or will I have to shoot your damned hand off?
Benedict wasn't even holding a gun, but the tone of his voice was such that the man let go instantly.
Good,
Benedict said, holding his arm out toward the maid. She stepped forward and, with trembling fingers, placed her hand on his elbow.
You can't just take her,
Philip yelled. Benedict gave him a supercilious look.
I just did. You'll be sorry you did this, Philip said. I doubt it. Now get out of my sight.
Philip made a huffy sound, then turned to his friends and said,
Let's get out of here.
Then he turned to Benedict and added,
Don't think you shall ever receive another invitation to one of my parties.
My heart is breaking, Benedict drawled.
Philip let out one more outraged snort, and then he and his two friends stalked back to the house. Sophie watched them walk away, then slowly dragged her gaze back to Benedict. When she'd been trapped by Philip and his leering friends, she'd known what they wanted to do to her, and she'd almost wanted to die. And then, all of a sudden, there was Benedict Bridgerton, standing before her like a hero from her dreams, and she'd thought maybe she had died, because why else would he be here with her unless she was in heaven? She'd been so completely and utterly stunned She'd almost forgotten that Philip's friend still held her pinned against him and was grabbing her behind in a most humiliating manner. For one brief second, the world had melted away, and the only thing she could see, the only thing she knew, was Benedict Bridgerton. It had been a moment of perfection. But then the world had come crashing back, and all she could think was, what on earth was he doing here? It was a disgusting party, full of drunkards and whores. When she'd met him 2 years ago, he hadn't seemed the sort who would frequent such events, but she'd only known him for a few short hours. Perhaps she'd misjudged him. She closed her eyes in agony. For the past 2 years, the memory of Benedict Bridgerton had been the brightest light in her drab and dreary life. If she'd misjudged him, if he was little better than Philip and his friends, then she'd be left with nothing. Not even a memory of love. But he had saved her. That was irrefutable. Maybe it didn't really matter why he'd come to Philip's party, only that he had, and he had saved her. "Are you all right?" he suddenly asked. Sophie nodded, looking him squarely in the eye, waiting for him to recognize her.
"Are you certain?"
She nodded again, still waiting. It had to happen soon.
"Good. They were handling you roughly."
"I'll be all right."
Sophie chewed on her lower lip. She had no idea how he would react once he realized who she was. Would he be delighted? Furious? The suspense was killing her.
"How much time will it take for you to pack your things?"
Sophie blinked rather dumbly, then realized she was still holding her satchel.
"It's all right here," she said. "I was trying to leave when they caught me."
"Smart girl," he murmured approvingly.
Sophie just stared at him, unable to believe he hadn't recognized her.
"Let's be off then," he said. "It makes me ill just to be on Cavendish's property."
Sophie said nothing, but her chin jutted slightly forward and her head tilted to the side as she watched his face.
"Are you certain you're all right?" he asked.
And then Sophie started to think. 2 years ago, when she'd met him, half of her face had been covered by a mask. Her hair had been lightly powdered, making it seem blonder than it actually was. Furthermore, she'd since cut it and sold the locks to a wig maker. Her previous long waves were now short curls. Without Mrs. Gibbons to feed her, she'd lost nearly a stone. And when one got right down to it, they'd only been in each other's company a mere hour and a half. She stared at him, right into his eyes. And that was when she knew. He wasn't going to recognize her. He had no idea who she was. Sophie didn't know whether to laugh or to cry.
Chapter 7. It was clear to all of the guests at the Mottram Ball Thursday last that Miss Rosamond Railing has set her cap for Mr. Philip Cavender. It is the opinion of this author that the two are well matched indeed.
Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 30th of April, 1817. 10 minutes later, Sophie was sitting next to Benedict Bridgerton in his phaeton.
"Is there something in your eye?" he asked politely.
That caught her attention.
I beg your pardon?"
"You keep blinking," he explained. "I thought perhaps you had something in your eye."
Sophie swallowed hard, trying to suppress a round of nervous laughter. What was she supposed to say to him? The truth? That she was blinking because she kept expecting to wake up from what could only be a dream, or maybe a nightmare?
"Are you certain you're all right?" he asked.
She nodded.
"Just the after effects of shock, I imagine," he said.
She nodded again, letting him think that was all that affected her. How could he not have recognized her? She'd been dreaming of this moment for years. Her Prince Charming had finally come to rescue her, and he didn't even know who she was.
"What was your name again?" he asked. "I'm terribly sorry. It always takes me twice to remember a name."
"Miss Sophia Beckett."
There seemed little reason to lie. She hadn't told him her name at the masquerade.
"I'm pleased to meet you, Miss Beckett,"
he said, keeping his eyes on the dark road.
"I'm Mr. Benedict Bridgerton."
Sophie acknowledged his greeting with a nod, even though he wasn't looking at her. She held silent for a moment, mostly because she simply didn't know what to say in such an unbelievable situation. It was, she realized, the introduction that had never taken place 2 years earlier. Finally, she just said,
"That was a very brave thing you did."
He shrugged.
"There were three of them and only one of you. Most men would not have intervened."
This time he did look at her.
"I hate bullies,"
was all he said. She nodded again.
"They would have raped me."
"I know,"
he replied. And then he added,
"I have four sisters."
She almost said, "I know," but caught herself just in time. How was a housemaid from Wiltshire supposed to know that? So, instead, she said,
"I expect that is why you were so sensitive to my plight."
"I would like to think another man would come to their aid, should they ever find themselves in a similar situation."
"I pray you never have to find out."
He nodded grimly.
"As do I."
They rode on, silence cloaking the night. Sophie remembered the masquerade ball, when they hadn't lacked for conversation, even for a moment. It was different now, she realized. She was a housemaid, not a glorious woman of the ton. They had nothing in common. But still, she kept waiting for him to recognize her, to yank the carriage to a halt, clasp her to his chest, and tell her he'd been looking for her for 2 years. But that wasn't going to happen, she soon realized. He couldn't recognize the lady in the housemaid, and in all truth, why should he? People saw what they expected to see, and Benedict Bridgerton surely didn't expect to see a fine lady of the ton in the guise of a humble housemaid. Not a day had gone by that she hadn't thought of him, hadn't remembered his lips on hers, or the heady magic of that costumed night. He had become the centerpiece of her fantasies, dreams in which she was a different person, with different parents. In her dreams, she'd met him at a ball, maybe her own ball, hosted by her devoted mother and father. He courted her sweetly, with fragrant flowers and stolen kisses. And then, on a mellow spring day, while the birds were singing and a gentle breeze ruffled the air, he got down on one knee and asked her to marry him, professing his everlasting love and adoration. It was a fine daydream, surpassed only by the one in which they lived happily ever after, with three or four splendid children, born safely within the sacrament of marriage. But even with all her fantasies, she never imagined she'd actually see him again, much less be rescued by him from a trio of licentious attackers. She wondered if he ever thought of the mysterious woman in silver, with whom he'd shared one passionate kiss. She liked to think that he did, but she doubted that it had meant as much to him as it had to her. He was a man, after all, and had most likely kissed dozens of women. And for him, that one night had been much like any other. Sophie still read Whistledown whenever she could get her hands on it. She knew that he attended scores of balls. Why should one masquerade stand out in his memory? Sophie sighed and looked down at her hands, still clutching the drawstring to her small bag. She wished she owned gloves, but her only pair had worn out earlier that year, and she hadn't been able to afford another. Her hands looked rough and chapped, and her fingers were growing cold.
"Is that everything you own?"
Benedict asked, motioning to the bag. She nodded.
"I haven't much, I'm afraid. Just a change of clothing and a few personal mementos."
He was silent for a moment, then said,
"You have quite a refined accent for a housemaid."
He was not the first to make that observation, so Sophie gave him her stock answer.
"My mother was a housekeeper to a very kind and generous family.
they allowed me to share some of their daughter's lessons.
Why do you not work there? With an expert twist of his wrists, he guided his team to the left side of the fork in the road. I assume you do not speak of the Cavenders?
No, she replied, trying to devise a proper answer. No one had ever bothered to probe deeper than her offered explanation. No one had ever been interested enough to care. My mother passed on, she finally replied, and I did not deal well with the new housekeeper. He seemed to accept that, and they rode on for a few minutes. The night was almost silent, save for the wind and the rhythmic clip-clop of the horses' hooves. Finally, Sophie, unable to contain her curiosity, asked, "Where are we going?"
"I have a cottage not far away," he replied. "We'll stay there a night or two, then I'll take you to my mother's home. I'm certain she'll find a position for you in her household."
Sophie's heart began to pound. "This cottage of yours..."
"You will be properly chaperoned," he said with a faint smile. "The caretakers will be in attendance, and I assure you that Mr. and Mrs. Crabtree are not likely to let anything untoward occur in their house."
"I thought it was your house."
His smile grew deeper.
"I have been trying to get them to think of it as such for years, but I have never been successful."
Sophie felt her lips tug up at the corners.
"They sound like people I would like very much."
"I expect you would."
And then there was more silence. Sophie kept her eyes scrupulously straight ahead. She had the most absurd fear that if their eyes met, he would recognize her. But that was mere fancy. He'd already looked her squarely in the eye, more than once even, and he still thought her nothing but a housemaid. After a few minutes, however, she felt the oddest tingling in her cheek, and as she turned to face him, she saw that he kept glancing at her with an odd expression.
"Have we met?" he blurted out.
"No,"
she said, her voice a touch more choked than she would have preferred.
"I don't believe so."
"I'm sure you're right," he muttered, "but still, you do seem rather familiar."
"All housemaids look the same,"
she said with a wry smile.
"I used to think so,"
he mumbled. She turned her face forward, her jaw dropping. Why had she said that? Didn't she want him to recognize her? Hadn't she spent the last half hour hoping and wishing and dreaming and... And that was the problem. She was dreaming. In her dreams, he loved her. In her dreams, he asked her to marry him. In reality, he might ask her to become his mistress, and that was something she'd sworn she would never do. In reality, he might feel honour-bound to return her to Araminta, who would probably turn her straightaways over to the magistrate for stealing her shoe clips, and Sophie didn't for one moment think that Araminta hadn't noticed their disappearance. No, it was best if he did not recognise her. It would only complicate her life. And considering that she had no source of income, and in fact very little beyond the clothes on her back, her life did not need complications at this point. And yet she felt unaccountably disappointed that he had not instantly known who she was.
"Is that a raindrop?"
Sophie asked, eager to keep the conversation on more benign topics. Benedict looked up. The moon was now obscured by clouds.
"It didn't look like rain when we left," he murmured.
A fat raindrop landed on his thigh.
"But I do believe you're correct."
She glanced at the sky.
"The wind has picked up quite a bit. I hope it doesn't storm."
"It's sure to storm," he said wryly, "as we are in an open carriage. If I had taken my coach, there wouldn't be a cloud in the sky."
"How close are we to your cottage?"
"About half an hour away, I should think."
He frowned.
"Provided we are not slowed by the rain."
"Well, I do not mind a bit of rain," she said gamely. "There are far worse things than getting wet."
They both knew exactly what she was talking about.
"I don't think I remembered to thank you,"
she said, her words quiet. Benedict turned his head sharply. By all that was holy, There was something damned familiar about her voice, but when his eyes searched her face, all he saw was a simple housemaid. A very attractive housemaid, to be sure, but a housemaid nonetheless. No one with whom he would ever have crossed paths.
It was nothing,
he finally said. To you, perhaps. To me, it was everything. Uncomfortable with such appreciation, he just nodded and gave one of those grunts men tended to emit when they didn't know what to say.
It was a very brave thing you did, she said.
He grunted again. And then the heavens opened up in earnest. It took about 1 minute for Benedict's clothes to be soaked through.
I'll get there as quickly as I can,
he yelled, trying to make himself heard over the wind.
Don't worry about me,
Sophie called back. But when he looked over at her, he saw that she was huddling into herself, her arms wrapped tightly over her chest as she tried to conserve the heat of her body.
Let me give you my coat.
She shook her head and actually laughed.
It'll probably make me even wetter, soaked as it is.
He nudged the horses into a faster pace, but the road was growing muddy, and the wind was whipping the rain every which way, reducing the already mediocre visibility. Bloody hell. This was just what he needed. He'd had a head cold all last week, and he probably wasn't completely recovered. A ride in the freezing rain would most likely set him back, and he'd spend the next month with a runny nose, watery eyes, all those infuriating, unattractive symptoms. Of course, Benedict couldn't quite contain a smile. Of course, if he were ill again, his mother couldn't try to cajole him into attending every single party in town, all in the hopes that he would find some suitable young lady and settle down into a quiet and happy marriage. To his credit, he always kept his eyes open, was always on the lookout for a prospective bride. He certainly wasn't opposed to marriage on principle. His brother Anthony and his sister Daphne had made splendidly happy matches. But Anthony's and Daphne's marriages were splendidly happy because they'd been smart enough to wed the right people. And Benedict was quite certain he had not yet met the right person. No, he thought, his mind wandering back a few years. That wasn't entirely true. He'd once met someone, the lady in silver. When he'd held her in his arms and twirled her around the balcony in her very first waltz, he'd felt something different inside, a fluttering, tingling sensation. It should have scared the hell out of him, but it hadn't. It had left him breathless, excited, and determined to have her. But then she'd disappeared. It was as if the world were actually flat, and she'd fallen right off the edge. He'd learned nothing in that irritating interview with Lady Penwood, and when he'd queried his friends and family, no one knew anything about a young woman wearing a silver dress. She hadn't arrived with anyone, and she hadn't left with anyone. For all intents and purposes, she hadn't even existed. He'd watched for her at every ball, party, and musicale he attended. Hell, he attended twice as many functions as usual, just in the hopes that he'd catch a glimpse of her. But he'd always come home disappointed. He'd thought he would stop looking for her. He was a practical man, and he'd assumed that eventually he would simply give up. And in some ways he had. After a few months, he found himself back in the habit of turning down more invitations than he accepted. A few months after that, he realized that he was once again able to meet women and not automatically compare them to her. But he couldn't stop himself from watching for her. He might not feel the same urgency, but whenever he attended a ball or took a seat at a musicale, he found his eyes sweeping across the crowd, his ears straining for the lilt of her laughter. She was out there somewhere. He'd long since resigned himself to the fact that he wasn't likely to find her, and he hadn't searched actively for over a year. But he smiled wistfully. He just couldn't stop from looking. It had become, in a very strange way, a part of who he was. His name was Benedict Bridgerton. He had 7 brothers and sisters, was rather skilled with both a sword and a sketching crayon, and he always kept his eyes open for the one woman who had touched his soul. He kept hoping and wishing and watching. And even though he told himself it was probably time to marry, he just couldn't muster the enthusiasm to do so. Because what if he put his ring on some woman's finger and the next day he saw her? It would be enough to break his heart. No, it would be more than that. It would be enough to shatter his soul. Benedict breathed a sigh of relief as he saw the village of Rosemead approaching. Rosemead meant that his cottage was a mere 5 minutes away, and lud, but he couldn't wait to get inside and throw himself into a steaming tub of water. He glanced over at Miss Beckett. She, too, was shivering. But, he thought with a touch of admiration, she hadn't let out even a peep of complaint. Benedict tried to think of another woman of his acquaintance who would have stood up to the elements with such fortitude, and came up empty-handed. Even his sister Daphne, who was as good a sport as any, would have been howling about the cold by now.
"We're almost there," he assured her.
"I'm all... Oh, are you all right?"
Benedict was gripped by a wave of coughs, the deep hacking kind that rumble down in one's chest. His lungs felt as if they were on fire, and his throat like someone had taken a razor blade to it.
"I'm fine,"
he gasped, jerking slightly on the reins to make up for the lack of direction he'd given the horses while he was coughing.
"You don't sound fine."
"Had a head cold last week," he said with a wince.
Damn, but his lungs felt sore.
"That didn't sound like your head,"
she said, giving him what she obviously hoped was a teasing smile. But it didn't look like a teasing smile. In truth, she looked terribly concerned.
"Must have moved," he muttered.
"I don't want you getting sick on my account."
He tried to grin, but his cheekbones ached too much.
"I would have been caught in the rain whether I'd taken you along or not."
Still, whatever she'd intended to say was lost under another stream of deep, chesty coughs.
"Sorry," he mumbled.
"Let me drive,"
she said, reaching for the reins. He turned to her in disbelief.
"This is a phaeton, not a single-horse wagon."
Sophie fought the urge to throttle him. His nose was running, his eyes were red, he couldn't stop coughing, and still he found the energy to act like an arrogant peacock.
"I assure you," she said slowly, "that I know how to drive a team of horses."
"And where did you acquire that skill?"
"The same family that allowed me to share in their daughter's lessons,"
Sophie lied.
"I learned to drive a team when the girls learned."
"The lady of the house must have taken quite a liking to you," he said.
"She did, quite,"
Sophie replied, trying not to laugh. Araminta had been the lady of the house, and she'd fought tooth and nail every time her father had insisted that she be allowed to receive the same instruction as Rosamond and Posy. They'd all three learned how to drive teams the year before the Earl had died.
"I'll drive, thank you,"
Benedict said sharply. Then he ruined the entire effect by launching into yet another coughing fit. Sophie reached for the reins.
"For the love of..."
"Here,"
he said, thrusting them toward her as he wiped his eyes.
"Take them, but I'll be watching you."
"I would expect no less,"
she said peevishly. The rain didn't exactly make for ideal driving conditions, and it had been years since she'd held reins in her hands, but she thought she acquitted herself rather nicely. There were some things one didn't forget, she supposed. It felt rather nice, actually, to do something she hadn't done since her previous life, when she'd been, officially at least, an Earl's ward. She'd had fine clothes then, and good food, and interesting lessons, and... She sighed. It hadn't been perfect, but it had been better than anything that had come after.
"What's wrong?"
Benedict asked.
"Nothing. Why should you think something is wrong?"
"You sighed."
"You heard me over the wind?"
she asked incredulously.
"I've been paying close attention. I'm sick enough."
Cough, cough.
"Without you landing us in a ditch."
Sophie decided not even to credit him with a reply.
Turn right up ahead, he directed. It'll take us directly to my cottage.
She did as he asked. Does your cottage have a name?
My cottage.
I might have known, she muttered. He smirked. Quite a feat, in her opinion, since he looked sick as a dog.
I'm not kidding, he said.
Sure enough, in another minute, they pulled up in front of an elegant country house, complete with a small, unobtrusive sign in front reading, My Cottage.
The previous owner coined the name,
Benedict said, as he directed her toward the stables,
but it seemed to fit me as well.
Sophie looked over at the house, which, while fairly small, was no humble dwelling.
You call this a cottage?
No, the previous owner did, he replied. You should have seen his other house.
A moment later they were out of the rain, and Benedict had hopped down and was unhitching the horses. He was wearing gloves, but they were completely sodden and slipping on the bridle, and so he peeled them off and flung them away. Sophie watched him as he went about his work. His fingers were wrinkled like prunes and trembling from the cold.
Let me help, she said, stepping forward.
I can do it.
Of course you can, she said placatingly, but you can do it faster with my help.
He turned, presumably to refuse her again, then doubled over as he was racked by coughs. Sophie quickly rushed in and led him to a nearby bench.
Sit down, please, she implored him. I'll finish up the job.
She thought he'd disagree, but this time he gave in.
I'm sorry, he said hoarsely.
There's nothing to feel sorry about, she said, making quick work of the job, or as quick as she could.
Her fingers were still numb, and bits of her skin had turned white from having been wet for so long.
Not very...
He coughed again, this one lower and deeper than before.
Gentlemanly of me.
Oh, I think I can forgive you this time, considering the way you saved me earlier this evening.
Sophie tried to give him a jaunty smile, but for some reason it wobbled, and without warning she found herself inexplicably near tears. She turned quickly away, not wanting him to see her face. But he must have seen something, or maybe just sensed that something was wrong, because he called out,
Are you all right?
I'm fine,
she replied, but her voice came out strained and choked, and before she knew it, he was next to her, and she was in his arms.
It's all right, he said soothingly. You're safe now.
The tears burst forth. She cried for what could have been her fate that evening, and she cried for what had been her fate for the past 9 years. She cried for the memory of when he'd held her in his arms at the masquerade, and she cried because she was in his arms right now. She cried because he was so damned nice, and even though he was clearly ill, even though she was, in his eyes, nothing but a housemaid, he still wanted to care for her and protect her. She cried because she hadn't let herself cry in longer than she could remember, and she cried because she felt so alone. And she cried because she'd been dreaming of him for so very long, and he hadn't recognized her. It was probably best that he did not, but her heart still ached from it. Eventually, her tears subsided, and he stepped back, touching her chin as he said,
Do you feel better now?
She nodded, surprised that it was true.
Good. You had a scare and...
He jerked away from her, doubling over as he coughed.
We really need to get you inside, Sophie said, brushing away the last streaks of her tears. Inside the house, that is.
He nodded.
I'll race you to the door.
Her eyes widened in shock. She couldn't believe that he had the spirit to make a joke of this, when he was obviously feeling so poorly. But she wrapped the drawstring of her bag around her hands, hitched up her skirts, and ran for the front door to the cottage. By the time she reached the steps, she was laughing from the exertion, giggling at the ridiculousness of running wildly to get out of the rain when she was already soaked to the bone. Benedict had, not surprisingly, beaten her to the small portico. He might have been ill, but his legs were significantly longer and stronger. When she skidded to a halt at his side, he was banging on the front door.
Don't you have a key?
Sophie yelled. The wind was still howling, making it difficult to be heard.
He shook his head. I wasn't planning on stopping here.
Do you think the caretakers will even hear you?
I bloody well hope so, he muttered.
Sophie wiped away the rivulets of water running over her eyes and peeked in a nearby window.
It's very dark, she told him. Do you think they might not be home?
I don't know where else they'd be.
Shouldn't there at least be a maid or a footman?
Benedict shook his head.
I'm so rarely here it seemed foolish to hire a full staff. The maids only come in for the day.
Sophie grimaced.
I'd suggest we look for an open window, but that's rather unlikely in the rain.
Not necessary, Benedict said grimly. I know where the spare key is hidden.
Sophie looked at him in surprise.
Why do you sound so glum about it?
He coughed several times before answering.
Because it means I have to go back out into the bloody storm.
Sophie knew he was truly reaching the end of his patience. He'd already sworn twice in front of her, and he didn't seem the sort to curse in front of a woman, even a mere housemaid.
Wait here,
he ordered. And then before she could reply, he left the shelter of the portico and dashed away. A few minutes later, she heard a key turning in the lock, and the front door swung open to reveal Benedict, holding a candle and dripping all over the floor.
I don't know where Mr. and Mrs. Crabtree are, he said,
his voice raspy from all his coughing,
but they're definitely not here.
Sophie gulped.
We're alone,
he nodded.
Completely.
She edged toward the stairs.
I'd better find the servants' quarters.
Oh, no, you won't,
he growled, grabbing hold of her arm.
I won't.
He shook his head.
You, dear girl, aren't going anywhere.
Chapter 8. It seems one cannot take two steps at a London ball these days without stumbling across a society matron lamenting the difficulties of finding good help. Indeed, this author thought that Mrs. Featherington and Lady Penwood were going to come to blows at last week's Smythe Smith musicale. It seems that Lady Penwood stole Mrs. Featherington's lady's maid right out from under her nose 1 month ago, promising higher wages and free cast-off clothing. It should be noted that Mrs. Featherington also gave the poor girl cast-off clothing, but anyone who has ever observed the attire of the Featherington girls would understand why the lady's maid would not view this as a benefit. The plot thickened, however, when the lady's maid in question fled back to Mrs. Featherington, begging to be rehired. It seemed that Lady Penwood's idea of a lady's maid included duties more accurately ascribed to the scullery maid, upstairs maid, and cook. Someone ought to tell the woman that one girl cannot do the work of three. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 2nd of May, 1817.
We're going to build a fire, Benedict said, and get warm before either of us goes off to bed. I didn't save you from Cavender just so you could die of influenza.
Sophie watched him cough anew, the spasms racking his body and forcing him to bend over at the waist.
Begging your pardon, Mr. Bridgerton,
she could not help commenting.
But of the two of us, I should think you're more in danger of contracting influenza.
Just so, he gasped. And I assure you, I have no desire to be so afflicted either. So...
He bent over again as he was once again engulfed by coughs.
Mr. Bridgerton?
Sophie asked, concern in her voice. He swallowed convulsively and barely managed to say,
Just help me get a fire blazing before I cough myself into oblivion.
Sophie's brow knit with worry. His coughing fits were coming closer and closer together, and each time they were deeper, more rumbly, as if they were coming from the very pit of his chest. She made easy work of the fire. She'd certainly had enough experience setting them as a housemaid, and soon they were both holding their hands as close to the flames as they dared.
I don't suppose your change of clothing remained dry,
Benedict said, nodding toward Sophie's sodden satchel.
I doubt it, she said ruefully, but it's no matter.
If I stand here long enough, I'll dry out.
Don't be silly, he scoffed, turning around so that the fire might heat his back. I'm sure I can find you a change of clothing.
You have women's clothing here? She asked doubtfully.
You're not so fussy that you can't wear breeches and a shirt for one evening, are you?
Until that very moment, Sophie had probably been exactly that fussy, but put that way, it did seem a little silly.
I suppose not, she said.
Dry clothing certainly sounded appealing.
Good, he said briskly. Why don't you light the furnaces in two bedrooms, and I'll find us both some clothing.
I can stay in the servants' quarters, Sophie said quickly.
Not necessary, he said,
striding out of the room and motioning for her to follow.
I've extra rooms, and you are not a servant here.
But I am a servant, she pointed out, hurrying after him.
Do whatever you please, then.
He started to march up the stairs, but had to stop halfway up to cough.
You can find a tiny little room in the servants' quarters with a hard little pallet, or you can avail yourself of a guest bedroom, all of which, I assure you, come equipped with feather mattresses and goose-down coverlets.
Sophie knew that she should remember her place in the world and march right up the next flight of stairs to the attic. But by God above, a feather mattress and down coverlet sounded like heaven on earth. She hadn't slept in such comfort in years.
I'll just find a small guest bedroom, she acceded. The smallest you have.
Half of Benedict's mouth quirked up in a dry, I told you so, sort of smile.
Pick whichever room you like, but not that one,
he said, pointing to the second door on the left.
That's mine.
I'll get the furnace started in there immediately, she said.
He needed the warmth more than she did, and besides, she found herself inordinately curious to see what the inside of his bedroom looked like. One could tell a lot about a person by the decor of his bedchamber. Provided, of course, she thought with a grimace, that one possessed enough funds to decorate in the manner one preferred. Sophie sincerely doubted that anyone could have told anything about her from her little attic turret at the Cavenders', except for the fact that she had not a penny to her name. Sophie left her satchel in the hall and scurried into Benedict's bedchamber. It was a lovely room, warm and masculine, and very comfortable. Despite the fact that Benedict had said he was rarely in residence, there were all sorts of personal items on the desk and tables, miniatures of what had to be his brothers and sisters, leather-bound books, and even a small glass bowl filled with rocks. How odd, Sophie murmured, moving forward even though she knew she was being dreadfully invasive and nosy.
Each one is meaningful in some way, came a deep voice from behind her. I've collected them since...
He stopped to cough.
Since I was a child.
Sophie's face flushed red at having been caught so shamelessly snooping, but her curiosity was still piqued, so she held one up. It was of a pinkish hue, with a ragged grey vein running straight through the middle.
What about this one?
I picked that one up on a hike, Benedict said softly. It happened to be the day my father died.
Oh.
Sophie dropped the rock back on the pile as if burned.
I'm so sorry.
It was long ago.
I'm still sorry.
He smiled sadly.
As am I.
Then he coughed, so hard that he had to lean against the wall.
You need to get warm, Sophie said quickly. Let me get to work on that fire.
Benedict tossed a bundle of clothing onto the bed.
For you,
he said simply.
Thank you,
she said, keeping her attention focused on the small furnace. It was dangerous to remain in the same room as him. She didn't think he was likely to make an untoward advance. He was far too much of a gentleman to foist himself on a woman he barely knew. No, the danger lay squarely within herself. Frankly, she was terrified that if she spent too much time in his company, she might fall head over heels in love. And what would that get her? Nothing but a broken heart. Sophie huddled in front of the small iron furnace for several minutes, stoking the flame until she was confident that it would not flicker out. There, she announced, once she was satisfied. She stood up, arching her back slightly as she stretched and turned around.
That should take care of... Oh, my!
Benedict Bridgerton looked positively green.
Are you all right?
She asked, hurrying to his side.
Don't feel too well,
he slurred, leaning heavily against the bedpost. He sounded vaguely intoxicated, but Sophie had been in his company for at least 2 hours, and she knew that he had not been drinking.
You need to get into bed,
she said, stumbling under his weight when he decided to lean against her instead of the bedpost. He grinned.
You coming?
She lurched back.
Now I know you're feverish.
He lifted his hand to touch his forehead, but he smacked his nose instead.
Ow!
He yelped. Sophie winced in sympathy. His hand crept up to his forehead.
Maybe I am a bit hot.
It was horribly familiar of her, but a man's health was at stake, so Sophie reached out and touched her hand to his brow. It wasn't burning, but it certainly wasn't cool.
You need to get out of those wet clothes, she said. Immediately.
Benedict looked down, blinking as if the sight of his sodden clothing was a surprise.
Yes,
he murmured thoughtfully.
Yes, I believe I do.
His fingers went to the buttons on his shirt, but they were clammy and numb and kept slipping and sliding. Finally, he just shrugged at her and said helplessly,
I can't do it.
Oh, dear. Here, I'll...
Sophie reached out to undo his buttons, jerked her hands back nervously, then finally gritted her teeth and reached out again. She made quick work of the buttons, doing her best to keep her gaze averted, as each undone button revealed another 2 inches of his skin.
Almost done,
she muttered.
Just a moment now.
He didn't say anything in reply, so she looked up. His eyes were closed, and his entire body was swaying slightly. If he weren't standing up, she'd have sworn that he was asleep.
Mr. Bridgerton?
She asked softly.
Mr. Bridgerton?
Benedict's head jerked up violently.
What? What?
You fell asleep.
He blinked confusedly.
Is there a reason that's bad?
You can't fall asleep in your clothing.
He looked down.
How'd my shirt get undone?
Sophie ignored the question, instead nudging him until his behind was leaning against the mattress.
Sit,
she ordered. She must have sounded suitably bossy, because he did.
Have you something dry we can change you into?
She asked. He shrugged the shirt off, letting it land on the floor in a messy heap.
Never sleep with clothes.
Sophie felt her stomach lurch.
Well, tonight I think you should, and... What are you doing?
He looked over at her, as if she'd asked the most inane question in the world.
Taking my breeches off.
Couldn't you at least wait until I'd turned my back?
He stared at her blankly. She stared back. He stared some more. Finally, he said,
Well?
Well what?
Aren't you going to turn your back?
Oh,
she yelped, spinning around as if someone had lit a fire under her feet. Benedict shook his head wearily as he sat on the edge of the bed and pulled off his stockings. God save him from prudish misses. She was a housemaid, for God's sake. Even if she was a virgin, and given her behaviour he rather suspected she was, she'd surely seen a male form before. Housemaids were always slipping in and out of rooms without knocking, carrying towels and sheets and what have you. It was inconceivable she'd never accidentally barged in on a naked man. He stripped off his breeches. Not an easy task, considering they were still more than a little damp, and he had quite literally to peel them from his skin. When he was well and truly naked, he quirked a brow in the direction of Sophie's back. She was standing rigidly, her hands fisted tightly at her sides. With surprise, he realized the sight of her made him smile. He was starting to feel a bit sluggish, and it took him 2 tries before he was able to lift his leg high enough to climb into bed. With considerable effort, he leaned forward and grabbed the edge of his coverlet, dragging it over his body. Then, completely worn out, he sagged back against the pillows and groaned.
"Are you all right?"
Sophie called. He made an effort to say, "Fine," but it came out more like, "Mph." He heard her moving about, and when he summoned up the energy to lift one eyelid halfway open, he saw that she'd moved to the side of the bed. She looked concerned. For some reason, that seemed rather sweet. It had been quite a long time since any woman, who wasn't related to him, had been concerned for his welfare.
"I'm fine," he mumbled,
trying to give her a reassuring smile. But his voice sounded like it was coming through a long, narrow tunnel. He reached up and tugged at his ear. His mouth felt like he was talking properly. The problem must be with his ears.
"Mr. Bridgerton? Mr. Bridgerton?"
He pried an eyelid open again.
"Go to bed," he grunted. "Get dry."
"Are you certain?"
He nodded. It was getting too difficult to speak.
"Very well, but I'm going to leave your door open. If you need me in the night, just call out."
He nodded again, or at least he tried to. Then he slept. It took Sophie barely a quarter of an hour to get ready for bed. A surfeit of nervous energy kept her going as she changed into dry clothing and readied the furnace in her room. But once her head hit the pillow, she felt herself succumbing to an exhaustion so total it seemed to come from her very bones. It had been a long day, she thought groggily, a really long day, between attending to her morning chores, dashing around the house to escape Cavender and his friends. Her eyelids drifted shut. It had been an extraordinarily long day, and... Sophie sat up suddenly, her heart pounding. The fire in the furnace had burned low, so she must have fallen asleep. She'd been dead tired, though, so something must have woken her. Was it Mr. Bridgerton? Had he called out? He'd not looked well when she'd left him, but neither had he seemed at death's door. Sophie hopped out of bed, grabbed a candle, then dashed toward the door of her room, grabbing hold of the waistband of the two big breeches Benedict had lent her when they started to slip down her hips. When she reached the hall, she heard the sound that must have woken her up. It was a deep groan, followed by a thrashing noise, followed by what could only be called a whimper. Sophie dashed into Benedict's room, stopping briefly at the furnace to light her candle. He was lying in his bed, almost preternaturally still. Sophie edged toward him, her eyes focusing on his chest. She knew he couldn't possibly be dead, but she'd feel an awful lot better once she saw his chest rise and fall.
"Mr. Bridgerton," she whispered. "Mr. Bridgerton."
No response. She crept closer, leaning over the edge of the bed.
"Mr. Bridgerton."
His hand shot out and grabbed her shoulder, pulling her off balance until she fell onto the bed.
"Mr. Bridgerton,"
Sophie squealed.
"Let go."
But he'd started to thrash and moan, and there was enough heat coming off his body that Sophie knew he was in the grips of a fever. She somehow managed to wrench herself free, and she went tumbling off the bed, while he continued to toss and turn, mumbling streams of words that made no sense. Sophie waited for a quiet moment, then darted her hand out to touch his forehead. It was on fire. She chewed on her lower lip as she tried to decide what to do. She had no experience nursing the feverish, but it seemed to her that the logical thing would be to cool him off. On the other hand, sick rooms always seemed to be kept closed, stuffy and warm. So maybe... Benedict started to thrash again, and then, out of nowhere, he murmured,
"Kiss me."
Sophie lost hold of her breeches. They fell to the floor. She let out a little yelp of surprise as she quickly bent to retrieve them. Clutching the waistband securely with her right hand, she reached out to pat his hand with her left, then thought the better of it.
"You're just dreaming, Mr. Bridgerton," she told him.
"Kiss me,"
he repeated, but he did not open his eyes. Sophie leaned in closer. Even by the light of one solitary candle, She could see his eyeballs moving quickly under his lids. It was bizarre, she thought, to see another person dream.
God damn it!
He suddenly yelled.
Kiss me!
Sophie lurched back in surprise, setting her candle hastily on the bedside table.
Mr. Bridgerton,
she began, fully intending to explain why she could not even begin to think about kissing him. But then she thought, why not? Her heart fluttering wildly, she leaned down and brushed the barest, lightest, most gentle of kisses on his lips.
I love you,
she whispered.
I've always loved you.
To Sophie's everlasting relief, he didn't move. It wasn't the sort of moment she wanted him to remember in the morning. But then, just when she was convinced that he'd settled back into a deep sleep, his head began to toss from side to side, leaving deep indentations in his feather pillow.
Where'd you go?
He grunted hoarsely.
Where'd you go?
I'm right here, Sophie replied.
He opened his eyes, and for the barest of seconds appeared completely lucid as he said,
Not you.
Then his eyes rolled back and his head started tossing from side to side again.
Well, I'm all you've got,
Sophie muttered.
Don't go anywhere, she said with a nervous laugh. I'll be right back.
And then, her heart pounding with fear and nerves, she ran out of the room. If there was one thing Sophie had learned in her days as a housemaid, it was that most households were run in essentially the same way. It was for that reason that she had no trouble at all finding spare linens to replace Benedict's sweat-soaked sheets. She also scavenged a pitcher full of cool water and a few small towels for dampening his brow. Upon her return to his bedroom, she found him lying still again, but his breathing was shallow and rapid. Sophie reached out and touched his brow again. She couldn't be certain, but it seemed to her that it was growing warmer. Oh dear, this was not good, and she was singularly unqualified to care for a feverish patient. Araminta, Rosamond and Posy had never had a sick day in their lives, and the Cavenders had all been uncommonly healthy as well. The closest she'd ever come to nursing had been helping Mrs. Cavender's mother, who'd been unable to walk, but she'd never taken care of someone with a fever. She dunked a cloth in the pitcher of water, then wrung it out until it was no longer dripping from the corners.
This ought to make you feel a little better,
she whispered, placing it gingerly on his brow. Then she added, in a rather unconfident voice,
At least I hope it will.
He didn't flinch when she touched him with the cloth. Sophie took that as an excellent sign, and she prepared another cool towel. She had no idea where to put it, though. His chest somehow didn't seem right, and she certainly wasn't going to allow the bedsheet to drift any lower than his waist, unless the poor man was at death's door. And even then, she wasn't certain what she could possibly do down there that would resurrect him. So she finally just dabbed with it behind his ears, and a little on the sides of his neck.
Does that feel better?
She asked, not expecting any sort of an answer, but feeling nonetheless that she ought to continue with her one-sided conversation.
I really don't know very much about caring for the ill, but it just seems to me like you'd want something cool on your brow. I know if I were sick, that's how I'd feel.
He shifted restlessly, mumbling something utterly incoherent.
Really?
Sophie replied, trying to smile but failing miserably.
I'm glad you feel that way.
He mumbled something else.
No, she said, dabbing the cool cloth on his ear. I'd have to agree with what you said the first time.
He went still again.
I'd be happy to reconsider, she said worriedly. Please don't take offence.
He didn't move.
Sophie sighed. One could only converse so long with an unconscious man before one started to feel extremely silly.
She lifted up the cloth she'd placed on his forehead and touched his skin. It felt kind of clammy now, clammy and still warm, which was a combination she wouldn't have thought possible. She decided to leave the cloth off for now, and she laid it over the top of the pitcher. There seemed little she could do for him at that very moment, so Sophie stretched her legs and walked slowly around his room, shamelessly examining everything that wasn't nailed down, and quite a bit that was. The collection of miniatures was her first stop. There were 9 on the writing desk. Sophie surmised that they were of Benedict's parents and 7 brothers and sisters. She started to put the siblings in order according to their ages, but then it occurred to her that the miniatures most likely hadn't been painted all at the same time, so she could be looking at a likeness of his older brother at 15 and younger brother at 20. She was struck by how alike they all were, with the same deep chestnut hair, wide mouths, and elegant bone structure. She looked closely to try to compare eye colour, but found it impossible in the dim candlelight, and besides, eye colour often wasn't easily discerned on a miniature anyway. Next to the miniatures was the bowl with Benedict's rock collection. Sophie picked a few of them up in turn, rolling them lightly over her palm.
"Why are these so special to you, I wonder?"
she whispered, placing them carefully back in the bowl. They just looked like rocks to her, but she supposed that they might appear more interesting and unique to Benedict if they represented special memories for him. She found a small wooden box that she absolutely could not open. It must have been one of those trick boxes she'd heard about that came from the Orient. And most intriguing, leaning against the side of the desk was a large sketchbook filled with pencil drawings, mostly of landscapes, but with a few portraits as well. Had Benedict drawn them? Sophie squinted at the bottom of each drawing. The small squiggles certainly looked like 2 bees. Sophie sucked in her breath, an unbidden smile lighting her face. She'd never dreamed that Benedict was an artist. There had never even been a peep about it in Whistledown, and it seemed like the sort of thing the gossip columnist would have figured out over the years. Sophie drew the sketchbook closer to her candle and flipped through the pages. She wanted to sit with the book and spend 10 minutes perusing each sketch, but it seemed too intrusive to examine his drawings in such detail. She was probably just trying to justify her nosiness, but somehow it didn't seem as bad just to give them a glance. The landscapes were varied. Some were of my cottage, or should she call it his cottage, and some were of a larger house, which Sophie supposed was the country home of the Bridgerton family. Most of the landscapes featured no architecture at all, just a babbling brook, or a windswept tree, or a rain-dappled meadow. And the amazing thing about his drawings was that they seemed to capture the whole and true moment. Sophie could swear that she could hear that brook babbling, or the wind ruffling the leaves on that tree. The portraits were fewer in number, but Sophie found them infinitely more interesting. There were several of what had to be his littlest sister, and a few of what she thought must be his mother. One of Sophie's favourites was of what appeared to be some kind of outdoor game. At least 5 Bridgerton siblings were holding long mallets, and one of the girls was depicted at the forefront, her face screwed up in determination as she tried to aim a ball through a wicket. Something about the picture almost made Sophie laugh out loud. She could feel the merriment of the day, and it made her long desperately for a family of her own. She glanced back at Benedict, still sleeping quietly in his bed. Did he realise how lucky he was to have been born into such a large and loving clan? With a sigh, Sophie flipped through a few more pages until she reached the end of the book. The very last sketch was different from the rest, if only because it appeared to be of a night scene, and the woman in it was holding her skirts above her ankles as she ran across... Good God! Sophie gasped, thunderstruck. It was her. She brought the sketch closer to her face. He'd gotten the details of her dress, that wonderful, magical silver concoction that had been hers for only a single evening, perfectly. He'd even remembered her long, elbow-length gloves and the exact manner in which her hair had been styled. Her face was a little less recognisable, but one would have to make allowances for that, given that he'd never actually seen it in its entirety. Well, not until now. Benedict suddenly groaned, and when Sophie glanced over, she saw that he was shifting restlessly in the bed. She closed up the sketchbook and put it back into its place before hurriedly making her way to his side.
"Mr. Bridgerton,"
she whispered. She wanted desperately to call him Benedict. That was how she thought of him. That was what she'd called him in her dreams these long 2 years. But that would be inexcusably familiar, and certainly not in keeping with her position as a servant.
"Mr. Bridgerton," she whispered again, "are you all right?"
His eyelids fluttered open.
"Do you need anything?"
He blinked several times, and Sophie couldn't be sure whether he'd heard her or not. He looked so unfocused, she couldn't even be sure whether he'd truly seen her.
"Mr. Bridgerton?"
He squinted.
"Sophie,"
he said hoarsely, his throat sounding terribly dry and scratchy.
"The housemaid."
She nodded.
"I'm here. What do you need?"
"Water,"
he rasped.
"Right away."
Sophie had been dunking the cloths into the water in the pitcher, but she decided that now was no time to be fussy, so she grabbed hold of the glass she'd brought up from the kitchen and filled it.
"Here you are,"
she said, handing it to him. His fingers were shaky, so she did not let go of the glass as he brought it to his lips. He took a couple of sips, then sagged back against his pillows.
"Thank you,"
he whispered. Sophie reached out and touched his brow. It was still quite warm, but he seemed lucid once again, and she decided to take that as a sign that the fever had broken.
"I think you'll be better in the morning."
He laughed, not hard, and not with anything approaching vigour, but he actually laughed.
"Not likely," he croaked.
"Well, not recovered," she allowed, "but I think you'll feel better than you do right now."
"It would certainly be hard to feel worse."
Sophie smiled at him.
"Do you think you can scoot to one side of your bed so I can change your sheets?"
He nodded and did as she asked, closing his weary eyes as she changed the bed around him.
"That's a neat trick," he said when she was done.
"Mrs. Cavender's mother often came to visit,"
Sophie explained.
"She was bedridden, so I had to learn how to change the sheets without her leaving the bed. It's not terribly difficult."
He nodded.
"I'm going back to sleep now."
Sophie gave his shoulder a reassuring pat. She just couldn't help herself.
"You'll feel better in the morning,"
she whispered.
"I promise."
Chapter 9. It has oft been said that physicians make the worst patients, but it is the opinion of this author that any man makes a terrible patient. One might say it takes patience to be a patient, and heaven knows, the males of our species lack an abundance of patience. Lady Whistledown's Society Papers, 2nd of May, 1817. The first thing Sophie did the following morning was scream. She'd fallen asleep in the straight-backed chair next to Benedict's bed, her limbs sprawled most inelegantly, and her head cocked to the side in a rather uncomfortable position. Her sleep had been light at first, her ears perked to listen for any sign of distress from the sickbed. But after an hour or so of complete, blessed silence, exhaustion claimed her, and she fell into a deeper slumber, the kind from which one ought to awaken in peace, with a restful, easy smile on one's face. Which may have been why, when she opened her eyes and saw two strange people staring at her, she had such a fright that it took a full 5 minutes for her heart to stop racing.
"Who are you?"
The words tumbled out of Sophie's mouth before she realised exactly who they must be. Mr. and Mrs. Crabtree, the caretakers of My Cottage.
"Who are you?"
the man demanded, not a little bit belligerently.
"Sophie Beckett,"
she said with a gulp.
"I..."
She pointed desperately at Benedict.
"He..."
"Spit it out, girl!"
"Don't torture her,"
came a croak from the bed. Three heads swiveled in Benedict's direction.
"You're awake," Sophie exclaimed.
"Wish to God I weren't," he muttered. "My throat feels like it's on fire."
"Would you like me to fetch you some more water?"
Sophie asked solicitously. He shook his head.
"Tea, please."
She shot to her feet.
"I'll go get it."
"I'll get it,"
Mrs. Crabtree said firmly.
"Would you like help?"
Sophie asked timidly. Something about this pair made her feel like she were 10 years old. They were both short and squat, but they positively exuded authority. Mrs. Crabtree shook her head.
"A fine housekeeper I am if I can't prepare a pot of tea."
Sophie gulped. She couldn't tell whether Mrs. Crabtree was miffed or joking.
"I never meant to imply..."
Mrs. Crabtree waved off her apology.
"Shall I bring you a cup?"
"You shouldn't fetch anything for me," Sophie said. "I'm a sir..."
"Bring her a cup," Benedict ordered.
"But..."
He jabbed his finger at her, grunting,
"Be quiet,"
before turning to Mrs. Crabtree and bestowing upon her a smile that could have melted an ice cap.
"Would you be so kind as to include a cup for Miss Beckett on the tray?"
"Of course, Mr. Bridgerton," she replied. "But may I say..."
"You can say anything you please, once you return with the tea," he promised.
She gave him a stern look.
"I have a lot to say."
"Of that I have no doubt."
Benedict, Sophie, and Mr. Crabtree waited in silence while Mrs. Crabtree left the room. And then, when she was safely out of earshot, Mr. Crabtree positively chortled and said,
"You're in for it now, Mr. Bridgerton."
Benedict smiled weakly. Mr. Crabtree turned to Sophie and explained,
"When Mrs. Crabtree has a lot to say, she has a lot to say."
"Oh," Sophie replied. She would have liked to have said something slightly more articulate, but "oh" was truly the best she could come up with on such short notice.
"And when she has a lot to say,"
Mr. Crabtree continued, his smile growing wide and sly,
"she likes to say it with great vigour."
"Fortunately," Benedict said in a dry voice, "we'll have our tea to keep us occupied."
Sophie's stomach grumbled loudly.
"And," Benedict continued, shooting her an amused glance, "a fair bit of breakfast, too, if I know Mrs. Crabtree."
Mr. Crabtree nodded.
"Already prepared, Mr. Bridgerton. We saw your horses in the stables when we returned from our daughter's house this morning, and Mrs. Crabtree got to work on breakfast straight away. She knows how you love your eggs."
Benedict turned to Sophie and gave her a conspiratorial sort of smile.
"I do love eggs."
Her stomach grumbled again.
"We didn't know there'd be two of you, though,"
Mr. Crabtree said. Benedict chuckled, then winced at the pain.
"I can't imagine that Mrs. Crabtree didn't make enough to feed a small army."
"Well, she didn't have time to prepare a proper breakfast, with beef pie and fish,"
Mr. Crabtree said.
"But I believe she has bacon and ham and eggs and toast."
Sophie's stomach positively growled. She clapped a hand to her belly, just barely resisting the urge to hiss, "Be quiet."
"You should have told us you were coming,"
Mr. Crabtree added, shaking a finger at Benedict.
"We never would have gone visiting if we'd known to expect you."
"It was a spur-of-the-moment decision,"
Benedict said, stretching his neck from side to side.
"Went to a bad party and decided to leave."
Mr. Crabtree jerked his head towards Sophie.
"Where'd she come from?"
"She was at the party."
"I wasn't at the party,"
Sophie corrected.
"I just happened to be there."
Mr. Crabtree squinted at her suspiciously.
"What's the difference?"
"I wasn't attending the party. I was a servant at the house."
"You're a servant?"
Sophie nodded.
"That's what I've been trying to tell you."
"You don't look like a servant."
Mr. Crabtree turned to Benedict.
"Does she look like a servant to you?"
Benedict shrugged helplessly.
"I don't know what she looks like."
Sophie scowled at him. It might not have been an insult, but it certainly wasn't a compliment.
"If she's somebody else's servant,"
Mr. Crabtree persisted,
"then what's she doing here?"
"May I save my explanations until Mrs. Crabtree returns?" Benedict asked, "since I'm certain she'll repeat all of your questions."
Mr. Crabtree looked at him for a moment, blinked, nodded, then turned back to Sophie.
"Why are you dressed like that?"
Sophie looked down and realized with horror that she'd completely forgotten she was wearing men's clothes. Men's clothes so big that she could barely keep the breeches from falling to her feet.
"My clothes were wet," she explained. "From the rain."
Mr. Crabtree nodded sympathetically.
"Quite a storm last night. That's why we stayed over at our daughter's. We'd planned to come home, you know."
Benedict and Sophie just nodded.
"She doesn't live terribly far away,"
Mr. Crabtree continued.
"Just on the other side of the village."
He glanced over at Benedict, who nodded immediately.
"Has a new baby,"
he added.
"A girl."
"Congratulations,"
Benedict said, and Sophie could see from his face that he was not merely being polite. He truly meant it. A loud clomping sound came from the stairway. Surely Mrs. Crabtree returning with breakfast.
"I ought to help," Sophie said, jumping up and dashing for the door.
"Once a servant, always a servant,"
Mr. Crabtree said sagely. Benedict wasn't sure, but he thought he saw Sophie wince. A minute later, Mrs. Crabtree entered, bearing a splendid silver tea service.
"Where's Sophie?" Benedict asked.
"I sent her down to get the rest," Mrs. Crabtree replied. "She should be up in no time. Nice girl," she added in a matter-of-fact tone. "But she needs a belt for those breeches you lent her."
Benedict felt something squeeze suspiciously in his chest at the thought of Sophie the housemaid, with her breeches round her ankles. He gulped uncomfortably when he realised the tight sensation might very well be desire. Then he groaned and grabbed at his throat, because uncomfortable gulps were even more uncomfortable after a night of harsh coughing.
"You need one of my tonics," Mrs. Crabtree said.
Benedict shook his head frantically. He'd had one of her tonics before. It had had him retching for 3 hours.
"I won't take no for an answer," she warned.
"She never does,"
Mr. Crabtree added.
"The tea will work wonders," Benedict said quickly.
"I'm sure."
But Mrs. Crabtree's attention had already been diverted.
"Where is that girl?"
she muttered, walking back to the door and looking out.
"Sophie? Sophie?"
"If you can keep her from bringing me a tonic,"
Benedict whispered urgently to Mr. Crabtree,
"it's a fiver in your pocket."
Mr. Crabtree beamed.
"Consider it done."
"There she is,"
Mrs. Crabtree declared.
"Oh, heaven above!"
"What is it, dearie?"
Mr. Crabtree asked, ambling toward the door.
"The poor thing can't carry a tray and keep her breeches up at the same time,"
she replied, clucking sympathetically.
"Aren't you going to help her?"
Benedict asked from the bed.
"Oh, yes, of course."
She hurried out.
"I'll be right back,"
Mr. Crabtree said over his shoulder.
"Don't want to miss this. Someone get the bloody girl a belt,"
Benedict yelled grumpily. It didn't seem quite fair that everyone got to go out to the hall and watch the sideshow while he was stuck in bed. And he definitely was stuck there. Just the thought of getting up made him dizzy. He must have been sicker than he'd realised the night before. He no longer felt the urge to cough every few seconds, but his body felt worn out, exhausted. His muscles ached, and his throat was damned sore. Even his teeth didn't feel quite right. He had vague recollections of Sophie taking care of him. She'd put cool compresses on his forehead, watched over him, even sung him a lullaby. But he'd never quite seen her face. Most of the time he hadn't had the energy to open his eyes, and even when he had, the room had been dark, always leaving her in shadows, reminding him of... Benedict sucked in his breath, his heart thumping crazily in his chest, as, In a sudden flash of clarity, he remembered his dream. He'd dreamed of her. It was not a new dream, although it had been months since he'd been visited by it. It was not a fantasy for the innocent either. Benedict was no saint, and when he dreamed of the woman from the masquerade, she was not wearing her silver dress. She was not, he thought with a wicked smile, wearing anything. But what perplexed him was why this dream would return now, after so many months of dormancy. Was there something about Sophie that had triggered it? He'd thought, he'd hoped, that the disappearance of the dream had meant he was over her. Obviously not. Sophie certainly didn't look like the woman he'd danced with 2 years earlier. Her hair was all wrong, and she was far too thin. He distinctly remembered the lush, curvy feel of the masked woman in his arms. In comparison, Sophie could only be called scrawny. He supposed their voices were a bit similar, but he had to admit to himself that, as time passed, his memories of that night grew less vivid, and he could no longer recall his mystery woman's voice with perfect clarity. Besides, Sophie's accent, while exceptionally refined for a housemaid, was not as upper crust as hers had been. Benedict let out a frustrated snort. How he hated calling her her. That seemed the cruelest of her secrets. She'd kept from him even her name. Part of him wished she'd just lied and given him a false name. At least then he'd have something to think of her by in his mind. Something to whisper in the night when he was staring out the window, wondering where in hell she was. Benedict was saved from further reflection by the sounds of stumbling and bumbling in the hallway. Mr. Crabtree was the first to return, staggering under the weight of the breakfast tray. "What happened to the rest?" Benedict asked suspiciously, eyeing the door.
"Mrs. Crabtree went off to find Sophie some proper clothing,"
Mr. Crabtree replied, setting the tray down on Benedict's desk.
"Ham or bacon?"
"Both. I'm famished. And what the devil does she mean by proper clothing?"
"A dress, Mr. Bridgerton. That's what women wear."
Benedict seriously considered lobbing a candle stump at him. "I meant," he said, with what he considered saintly patience,
"where is she going to find a dress?"
Mr. Crabtree walked over with a plate of food on a footed tray that would fit over Benedict's lap.
"Mrs. Crabtree has several extras. She's always happy to share."
Benedict choked on the bite of egg he'd shuffled into his mouth.
"Mrs. Crabtree and Sophie are hardly the same size. Neither are you,"
Mr. Crabtree pointed out,
"and she wore your clothes just fine."
"I thought you said the breeches fell off in the hall."
"Well, we don't have to worry about that with the dress, do we? I hardly think her shoulders are going to slip through the neck hole."
Benedict decided it was safer for his sanity to mind his own business, and he turned his full attention to his breakfast. He was on his third plate when Mrs. Crabtree bustled in.
"Here we are,"
she announced. Sophie slunk in, practically drowning in Mrs. Crabtree's voluminous dress. Except, of course, at her ankles. Mrs. Crabtree was a good 5 inches shorter than Sophie. Mrs. Crabtree beamed.
"Doesn't she look smashing?"
"Oh, yes,"
Benedict replied, lips twitching. Sophie glared at him.
"You'll have plenty of room for breakfast," he said gamely.
"It's only until I get her clothing cleaned up,"
Mrs. Crabtree explained.
"But at least it's decent."
She waddled over to Benedict.
"How is your breakfast, Mr. Bridgerton?"
"Delicious," he replied. "I haven't eaten so well in months."
Mrs. Crabtree leaned forward and whispered,
"I like your Sophie. May we keep her?"
Benedict choked. On what, he didn't know, but he choked nonetheless.
"I beg your pardon."
"Mr. Crabtree and I aren't as young as we used to be. We could use another set of hands around here."
I...
He cleared his throat.
"I'll think about it."
"Excellent."
Mrs. Crabtree crossed back to the other side of the room and grabbed Sophie's arm.
"You come with me. Your stomach has been growling all morning. When was the last time you ate?"
Sometime yesterday, I should think.
"When yesterday?"
Mrs. Crabtree persisted. Benedict hid a smile under his napkin. Sophie looked utterly overwhelmed. Mrs. Crabtree tended to do that to a person.
Well, actually...
Mrs. Crabtree planted her hands on her hips. Benedict grinned. Sophie was in for it now.
"Are you going to tell me that you didn't eat yesterday?"
Mrs. Crabtree boomed. Sophie shot a desperate look at Benedict. He replied with a "don't look to me for help" shrug. Besides, he rather enjoyed watching Mrs. Crabtree fuss over her. He'd be willing to bet that the poor girl hadn't been fussed over in years.
"I was very busy yesterday,"
Sophie hedged. Benedict frowned. She'd probably been busy running from Philip Cavender and the pack of idiots he called friends. Mrs. Crabtree shoved Sophie into the seat behind the desk.
"Eat,"
she ordered. Benedict watched as Sophie tucked into the food. It was obvious that she was trying to put on her best manners, but eventually hunger must have gotten the best of her, because after a minute she was practically shoveling the food into her mouth. It was only when Benedict noticed that his jaw was clamped together like a vice that he realized he was absolutely furious. At whom, he wasn't precisely certain. But he did not like seeing Sophie so hungry. They had an odd little bond, he and the housemaid. He'd saved her, and she'd saved him. Oh, he doubted his fever from the night before would have killed him. If it had been truly serious, he'd still be battling it now. But she had cared for him, and made him comfortable, and probably hastened his road to recovery.
"Will you make certain she eats at least another plateful?"
Mrs. Crabtree asked Benedict.
"I'm going to make up a room for her."
"In the servants' quarters,"
Sophie said quickly.
"Don't be a silly. Until we hire you on, you're not a servant here."
"But nothing more about it,"
Mrs. Crabtree interrupted.
"Would you like my help, dearie?"
Mr. Crabtree asked. Mrs. Crabtree nodded, and in a moment the couple was gone. Sophie paused in her quest to consume as much food as humanly possible to stare at the door through which they'd just disappeared. She supposed they considered her one of their own, because if she'd been anything but a servant, they'd never have left her alone with Benedict. Reputations could be ruined on far less.
"You didn't eat at all yesterday, did you?"
Benedict asked quietly. Sophie shook her head.
"Next time I see Cavender," he growled, "I'm going to beat him to a bloody pulp."
If she were a better person, she would have been horrified. But Sophie couldn't quite prevent a smile at the thought of Benedict further defending her honour, or of seeing Philip Cavender with his nose relocated to his forehead.
"Fill up your plate again," Benedict said, "if only for my sake. I assure you that Mrs. Crabtree counted how many eggs and strips of bacon were on the platter when she left, and she'll have my head if the numbers haven't gone down by the time she returns."
"She's a very nice lady,"
Sophie said, reaching for the eggs. The first plate of food had barely touched upon her hunger. She needed no further urging to eat.
"The best."
Sophie expertly balanced a slice of ham between a serving fork and spoon and moved it to her plate.
"How are you feeling this morning, Mr. Bridgerton?"
"Very well, thank you. Or if not well, then at least a damn sight better than I did last night."
"I was very worried about you,"
she said, spearing a corner of the ham with her fork and then cutting a piece off with her knife.
"It was very kind of you to care for me."
She chewed, swallowed, then said,
"It was nothing, really. Anyone would have done it."
"Perhaps," he said, "but not with such grace and good humour."
Sophie's fork froze in mid-air.
"Thank you," she said softly. "That is a lovely compliment."
"I didn't..."
He cleared his throat. Sophie eyed him curiously, waiting for him to finish whatever it was he wanted to say.
"Never mind," he mumbled.
Disappointed, she put a piece of ham in her mouth.
"I didn't do anything."